Okay, I'm going to call to order the Newcastle City Council meeting for Tuesday, October 1. Will you please stand and join me in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all.
Madam City Clerk, can I get roll call, please?
Deputy Mayor Newing.
Here.
Councilmember Simpson.
Here.
Mayor Dotterman. Councilmember Bissett.
Here.
Councilmember Mitchell.
Present.
Councilmember Kameen.
Here.
Councilmember Majors.
Here.
And may I please get a motion to excuse
Mayor Dotterman.
Second.
Okay, motion to move to excuse Mayor Dotterman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Ayes have it 6-0. All right, does anybody have any changes to the final agenda before we move to approve it?
I do, Chair Newing.
Councilmember Majors?
I'd like to add an item to the agenda for a City of Newcastle proclamation for Volunteer Appreciation Day.
Is there a second?
A second.
Okay, motion made to add City of Newcastle proclamation for Volunteer Appreciation Day. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Ayes have it 6-0. If I could ask the City Clerk guidance as to where we should add that item. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Do I have a motion to approve the final agenda?
Move to approve the final agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Ayes have it 6-0. Public comment. Anybody, if you'd like to speak, please step up to the microphone and state your name and neighborhood or organization. You have 3 minutes to speak. With an organization, you have 5 minutes.
There you go. I'm Kari Marino representing Verizon Wireless, and I just wanted to thank you for your consideration tonight of our request for our franchise agreement. This will allow us to continue our engineering to continue to provide robust wireless services for the citizens and businesses in Newcastle. So thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Additional comment?
Good evening, Deputy Mayor Newing and council members. I'm Michelle Drovdahl. I'm the regional manager for the Newcastle Library. And with me is Kirsten Corning, and she is our librarian services manager. We're here to inform you about what's going on at the library. First, I want to call to your attention our statistics. Newcastle is a busy library. We checked out 366,399 items, and Newcastle patrons downloaded 68,050 items. So that's a total of 434,449 items checked out for 2018. We had nearly 1 million minutes of patron time on computers. But circulation and computer usage aren't the only things happening at the library, and Kirsten will tell you about some of our programs.
Hi everyone, thank you so much for allowing us to talk about the Newcastle Library. Over the last 7 years, the Newcastle Library has become a beloved community hub. We see all ages reading, studying, learning, sharing, laughing, and connecting. We love being part of the city, and we value our partnerships in the community, including but not limited to the City of Newcastle, local schools, the Chamber and Historical Society. With all of us working together, we provide space and activities where our community can come together to converse, learn, listen, and grow. Our partnerships with the Newcastle Arts Council has been particularly robust this year. Since January, the Library and the Arts Council has joined forces to provide at least one arts-related program a month, designed to engage our community in a variety of creative pursuits, including acrylic painting, acting, calligraphy, and many more. We've hosted 3 successful local art exhibitions this last year, with more planned in 2020. This fall, we have scheduled writing programs, live cello music, and a workshop on how to make your money with creativity for those seeking an entrepreneurial approach to their art. We are proud to work with our partners to create a space where every Newcastle citizen feels welcome, encouraged, and involved. Thank you for your support and continued partnership as we head into 2020.
As you can see, we have many programs, but most of all, we have staff who are willing and able to help you find the information you need. And then there's me, who's always ready to help you find a good book. Thank you for your time, and see you at the library.
Thank you, Michelle and Kirsten. Anyone else for public comment? All right, with that, I'll close public comment. Consent agenda. May I have a motion to... Pulling and Allen. Council comments. We'll start with Councilmember Mitchell.
Not at this time. Thank you.
Councilmember Majors.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor Newing. I would like to comment robustly regarding the city's publications, notifications, and information provided for the recent fires that have occurred in our neighborhoods, particularly the May Creek fire, and the communications that were involved in that to our residents, as well as the most unfortunate residential fire in the Olympus neighborhood, where a family suffered the complete loss of their home. And I just really appreciate what our city communications were on social media of all types and city newsletters during this challenging time. So thank you very much.
Councilmember Kameen.
Yes, thank you. I would just like to say that last week I attended the Newcastle Historical Society event at the Bellevue Library, speaking of libraries, and it was very well done and extremely well attended. Lots of people were there. It was very informative and very enjoyable. So our Historical Society did an excellent job of informing a lot of people about the history of Newcastle.
Councilmember Bissett. Councilmember Simpson.
No comment.
Thank you. I want to thank, well, they already left. Anyway, I want to thank the representatives from the King County Library System for being here today. I was one of the founding members of Friends of the Newcastle Library, and I'm present and excited about the opening day ceremonies to have a library in our community. I remember when it was an empty lot. And it's been a huge addition to our community and many events held there. I attend a lot of things there. The candidate forum was there just last Saturday. And big thanks to Nathan Sticks, I think it is, mm-hmm. who is the MC. Very nice to be able to have an event like that in our community. I also attended the Newcastle Historical Society presentation at Bellevue Library. It was really great that it made it into the Seattle Times. That's why the room was overflowing. People were carrying in chairs overhead, trying to find places to sit. I was ready for the fire marshal to kick us all out because it was so crowded. But it was really fun, and if you ever start doing historical research, you can get really into that, and it sucks you in to be a sleuth and find out clues and follow things. It really is fun. And I concur with Councilmember Majors that having a communications person on staff was most helpful to getting word out. This wasn't a major disaster, but it was a disaster to the neighborhoods, and the smell of smoke was very distressing. Even when I walked into my garage, the first couple of days of the fire in May Creek, it filled my garage with smoke smell. I was wondering if my own house was on fire. But then to have it follow up with a fire just two blocks away in a similar home, and it had an asphalt shingle roof, and I'm still sitting under a wood shake roof. That was very distressing. And I saw it after the first fire, and then I saw it again after the second, and it just took my breath away to see just black studs standing up in the corner, that it was just a total loss. And think of what you have at home that you can't replace. We can donate, we can give money, but they can't replace their kids' artwork, their family photos, the toys, their clothing, all that stuff that we value so much. And this is what being community is all about, having our highly qualified fire department and what we work together to do together. That's it.
Thank you. Okay, I'd like to also echo the comments of Council Members Majors and Simpson on the communication and the continual updated information we received on the fire. I also ended up sharing a lot of that information with some of my coworkers who had an interest because it was so close to the Newcastle-Renton border. So moving on to the proclamation that we added to the agenda, I want to welcome two very special people in the audience tonight who are volunteers. Our Community Activities Commission Chair, Diane Lewis, and also Community Activities Commissioner, Patty Majors. Patty is the volunteer guru of Newcastle. She is out there trying to recruit, and not only that, she recognizes and appreciates these people who give their valuable time, you know, time away from their family to give back to our community. It's just, you know, it's so important in a community, especially a small one like ours. And with that, I have a proclamation that I'd like to present to you, but let me read it because I'm still battling a cold and a hoarse voice yet, so I need the mic tonight. Whereas every year, volunteers enhance the City of Newcastle by adding their time, diverse talents, and voices to advisory boards, special events, and projects that improve the quality of life for everyone. And whereas all of the groups and individuals who participate in the Newcastle community actively make a difference and accomplish goals that might otherwise be unattainable. And whereas volunteer contributions from organizations such as Newcastle Trails, local scout groups, the Newcastle Historical Society, Newcastle Youth for Community Engagement, the Friends of the Newcastle Library, Newcastle Kiwanis, Newcastle Arts Council, and the city's community activities and planning commissions are visible and enjoyed each day by Newcastle citizens. And whereas, through the first three quarters of 2019, approximately 100 volunteers contributed well over 1,100 hours of service benefiting Newcastle. And whereas Newcastle is honoring the volunteers who have made this city what it is today and shape what it will become at an October 7 appreciation event. And whereas the City of Newcastle recognizes the importance of volunteerism and the significant role it plays in enhancing and strengthening the Newcastle community. Now, therefore, I, Alan Dotterman, Mayor of City of Newcastle, Washington, on behalf of its City Council, do hereby proclaim October 7, 2019, as Volunteer Appreciation Day in the City of Newcastle, in honor of all citizens who selflessly donate their time and effort in the spirit of volunteerism.
Six of us. I didn't know her name was Alan, but
well, you know.
Chair Newing?
She's a stand-in.
Yes.
Would it be possible to get a copy of that?
I'm sorry?
Would it be possible to get a copy of that proclamation?
Perfect. Oh, I thought it was emailed out. Maybe it was just here. Okay. Mm-hmm. We got it.
Yeah, that's all I need. Thank
you. Okay. All right. Consent agenda. May I have a motion to...
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second? Anyone?
I'd like to pull something, if I may.
We approve the final agenda.
Oh, I'm sorry. The consent agenda.
We approve the final agenda, though.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I need to pull that before.
Okay. forgive me.
So there's a motion on the table. Is there a second?
Hold, give us 1 second.
That's okay. So in the agenda as now ordered, the approval of the final agenda is the time where you're supposed to amend the consent agenda, and that's in your own rules. However, you also have the ability to suspend your rules with a motion to suspend and then amend the consent if you'd like. So that there is relief if you'd like.
Well, there's a motion on the table right now.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the motion.
The motion is to approve the consent agenda. Councilmember Majors made that motion. I was looking for a second.
Was it seconded?
It was not. I was looking for a second.
Wasn't seconded yet.
It was not seconded.
Oh, okay. So that.
So you're not taking that up for discussion because there's no second. And so now, if you would like to make a different motion, okay. You can now. Because there's no motion on the floor, actually, because you didn't. There was no second yet.
Okay, I mean, I felt like we didn't have an opportunity to second it.
Oh,
so,
well, let's pause.
So I'll second the motion.
Okay.
It's on the floor. Okay. Well, the motion is to approve the consent agenda as presented. All in favor?
Question.
Hold on.
I'd like to make a comment. I had my hand up.
I'm sorry, I didn't see it.
Yeah. Usually, when you're doing the final agenda, the mayor mentions that this is the time to do the consent agenda modifications, and that wasn't done here.
Well, I think that's pretty elementary, and I think we all know that by now. When we approve the final agenda, that includes the consent agenda.
Go ahead.
Can we have 1 second just to talk about this for?
So I think a process would be an appropriate process would be a motion to amend the motion to approve the agenda, and the motion to amend would be to amend the consent agenda.
Right.
So you can move to amend that motion.
So prior to the vote, there's been a motion and a second. Just like any other motion, if somebody wants to amend, this would be the time to make a motion to amend that motion by, if you wanted to pull something, this would be you move to amend this motion.
So even if there's a second on the table?
Yeah, it's just like any other live motion on an ordinance or something, and somebody wants to amend that ordinance before, after discussion or during deliberation. Yep.
Okay, if I may, I would I move to amend the approval of the consent agenda by pulling item number 6.4.
Second. Okay, there's been a motion to amend the consent agenda by pulling item 6.4 and moving it to general business, which would be now be item 7.4. It's been moved and seconded. Would you like to speak to the amendment?
I'd love to, thank you. As far as the fee schedule goes, when we get
a point of order, do a point of order. The consent agenda is supposed to be not debatable. I would think the amendment would be not debatable. We can pull items from the consent agenda. So let's move forward.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
So you have to vote on the amendment.
Okay, all in favor of the consent agenda as amended?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Ayes have it 5-1 with Councilmember Majors dissenting. Okay, item 6.4 now moves to general business and will become item 7.4. First item of general business, 7.1, ordinance revising tree regulations for tree preservation. Mr. Vandaway, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor and Council.
Are we good?
So I believe there is an amendment that was adopted, but the main motion as amended has not been adopted, which is still the consent agenda.
Yes, apologies.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So motion to, may I get approval to for the consent agenda as amended?
Aye.
Aye.
I think we need a motion.
No, I'm sorry. As amended,
I'm wrong. Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Let's all in favor of the consent agenda as amended?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Ayes have it 6-0. All right, now, Mr. Vandeweghe, I'll turn it over to you. Whoa, that was a train wreck.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor.
Not you, me.
So if you'll recall, at your previous meeting, we discussed a proposed ordinance to amend the city's tree replacement and retention standards. And as we discussed, the Planning Commission narrowed the scope of this update down to a couple specific goals: to first, discourage nuisance tree species, and second, to encourage evergreen species. And so the ordinance you have before you is slightly different than the one we discussed last time. I think we had a really good conversation about what the goals are of this ordinance. And one of them was to ensure that if a site is covered by nothing but nuisance trees, that there's a provision to require replacement trees if a developer is going to remove all of those. And there are a couple other situations that came up that I think this amendment addresses. So to begin with, the current definition of significant tree that we have in our code is based strictly on the health and size of the tree. So 8 inches for evergreens, 12 inches for deciduous. That's the current standard, and the tree retention requirements are triggered typically by development proposals or grading permit applications, and that's when our tree retention standards kick in. So in this proposed ordinance, there are three definitions in there. The first of which is for mature tree. This is not a definition in our current code. This is to draw a distinction between significant trees, which would be non-nuisance mature trees, and then mature trees can include nuisance species or not. And then we've crafted the code to prioritize significant or non-nuisance trees. We also define nuisance species to clarify that as well. Additionally, we've changed the language for the tree retention standards. So it requires 25% of the mature rather than significant trees located in the interior of the lot to be preserved. And then the other significant change is that all of which those retained trees shall be significant trees, aka non-nuisance, except if significant trees do not constitute 25% of the interior lot's mature trees. Other mature trees in the lot interior shall be credited for retention. And it may appear confusing, but I have an exercise I'm going to walk through to demonstrate how this would be implemented. Additionally, we have a change to the tree replacement standards. So if the required number of trees cannot be retained, a developer would have to replace those that are removed. And so this new language would limit the replacement trees to only non-nuisance species. So they couldn't plant willows and cottonwoods and count those towards their replacement standard. And this language also requires at least 70% of the replacement trees must be coniferous evergreen trees. We discussed the benefits to our ecosystem and our stormwater system by having that year-round foliage that intercepts stormwater. So this is going to require at least 70% of the replacement trees are coniferous. We also had some debate about the use of coniferous or evergreen, and so in this proposed amendment, we're calling them coniferous evergreen trees. The only evergreen tree that grows in our climate that is not coniferous is a larch. So that's the only evergreen that we're disqualifying, essentially, through this language. So let's walk through an example of how this proposed code would be enforced. So typically, it's triggered by a development proposal. In this case, let's say this is a short plat where someone wants to create three lots and their site is covered by 12 large mature trees. And so they're required to submit an arborist report to the city that identifies all of the trees that meet that size threshold. And those are all considered mature trees. So now we have 12 trees, and our code says you must retain 25% of them. So 25% of 12 would be three trees. And so in the proposed code, we prioritize those non-nuisance species. So they would have to pick three from those first six listed, because those first six are all significant trees. That's top priority. Second priority are the nuisance species, cottonwoods and so on. They would not be able to preserve a cottonwood over a Douglas fir under our proposed code. And so if I'm a developer and I'm told I need to retain these three significant trees, I'm going to select the ones that are out of the way of where my development's going. And so I'll just save the three that are not in the path of my bulldozer, two firs and a maple. Bam, I've satisfied the code's requirement. Move on. In another scenario, though, if the trees are all located within areas where the bulldozer's going, in that case, I cannot retain the required number of trees. I'm going to have to replace trees. And so I need to calculate how many replacement trees to plant. So this is the same mix of trees. You still have to retain 25%. So the first thing you do is you pick three from the significant trees on your site. And I'm going to pick the three smallest significant trees because that's in my best interest. That's what the code would allow. These three trees I've selected still meet.
You lost me at pick three.
So you're required to pick three in order to satisfy the 25% requirement. And this list is prioritized by significant trees first and then nuisance trees second.
Okay.
25%
is 12. 12
is 3.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so our code requires you to provide double the diameter measurements. And so this Douglas fir number 3 is 10 inches in diameter. I have to provide 20 inches in replacement. And so we add up all three of these trees, doubling their diameter. You come up with 64 inches. And so typically, as a developer, I'm going to minimize my cost by planting very small young trees. And I'm going to plant enough of them to satisfy the code requirement. So how many little trees do I need? Okay, first of all, I'm going to take advantage of an incentive the city provides. If you'll recall, when you adopted the fee in lieu changes to the tree code, you also approved this 50% incentive for evergreens. So if I'm replacing a deciduous tree with an evergreen, I can reduce the number of inches of tree that I'm replacing by 50%. So the first thing I'm going to do is take 50% of the big leaf maple, because that's a deciduous tree. I'm going to replace it with young evergreen trees. In doing so, I can reduce that diameter requirement by 50%. So now it's down to only 12 inches. And I still have 40 inches of other trees to plant. So how am I going to figure out what those other trees are? Well, first of all, I'm going to plant three evergreen trees, 4 inches in diameter apiece. That takes me up to the 12 inches required to replace the big leaf maple. And then I have that 40 inches of other trees I need to figure out how I'm going to satisfy that. This proposed code requires at least 70% evergreens to be part of your replacement mix. So 70% of 52 inches is 37 inches of evergreen. And then there's this 15 inches of other trees I have to figure out. And so to satisfy the proposed code, I'm going to plant 10 young evergreen trees at 4 inches apiece. That gives me 40 inches. And then four other trees that are just a mix of evergreen, deciduous, 3 inches apiece, whatever's cheapest for my arborist. And that's how I'm going to satisfy the replacement requirement. And so what if my site did not have so many significant trees? What if it was mostly nuisance trees? So in this example, I have 12 trees on my site, but most of them are cottonwood and willow, and they're considered nuisance trees. Well, under our current code, a developer could claim full credit for any of those nuisance tree species. Under the proposed code, they would have to prioritize the non-nuisance species that you see at the top of the list, the Douglas fir and the big leaf maple. They'd have to save those first before they could claim any retention credit for any of the nuisance species. So under this example, first priority would go to the first two trees, which are non-nuisance species, and then second priority would go to any of the nuisance trees. And this way, if a site is covered by mostly nuisance trees or entirely nuisance trees, there's a mechanism for the city to require replacement trees for those removed. And I'm sure you have questions, but staff is recommending adoption of the ordinance. And I should clarify that there is a revised Exhibit 1 and Exhibit 2. And there's some green text added to Section 1816.130. We added some other references to mature trees. That's the new category for all-encompassing large trees. And we think this does a better job of capturing what council was after in terms of requiring replacement trees for nuisance species when that's all or most of what you have on a given site. So I welcome any questions you have.
Okay, we'll open it up for questions, and then we will we have to do a public hearing, correct? Or a public comment, yeah. And then we'll go for discussion. Councilmember Bissett.
Yes, this is a facetious question. Do we have this all written down so that in the future the staff will be able to figure out how to do this? I mean, you read through that, and I'm a mathematician. And, you know, I hope we always keep on staff someone who can understand this procedure. Thank you.
Councilmember Simpson.
Even though I got lost in the beginning, I've reviewed enough plats and counted and the tree counts and seen the list that are on the documents that the tree survey, that they do a pretty good job, even the developers can follow this. I have some concerns that we're throwing more language in here with mature and significant trees. Somewhere this is just about trees that are over 8 and 12 inches big. That when they talk about, say, at the discretion of the city, damaged or diseased or standing dead trees may be retained and counted towards the mature tree requirement. So I'm assuming the dead tree that's counted has to be a mature dead tree, not a 4-inch dead tree.
Correct.
So that when we're talking, generally, when we're talking about trees, we're still talking about mature trees, whether they're significant or mature, that throughout this code, because you start throwing in mature, and the lawyers can get in here and picky on it, that we didn't say mature trees everywhere. So somewhere there, we need to say that. So that gets tricky.
For the city's incentives to retain significant trees, the language in that section is still limited to significant trees because we don't want anyone to earn incentive credit for a nuisance species. Mm-hmm. But elsewhere in our proposed standards, it uses mature trees and significant trees in most mm-hmm. references.
Yeah. Well, I've seen arborists go through and pretty much decide that all the trees on the site were damaged, diseased, or dying. And that's really easy for somebody, for an arborist to say of trees. So then they didn't have to retain any of them. I've seen that happen in a plat. So
if that were to occur and we had questions about that, we'd hire our own arborist mm-hmm. to peer review mm-hmm. that other arborist report. We certainly wouldn't take that at face value.
I've seen our arborists do that too. Okay, that sort of makes it more comfortable for me that I don't have to be picky about making sure that mature and significant is in front of every single tree in the word tree in this code. So I'm comfortable with it.
Councilmember Kameen.
Yeah, as I read through your updated document here, I just said to myself, that's very clever. I appreciate how you use the definitions to get around some of the issues that we were seeing last time. So I appreciate that. Well done. And also, I have I do not think that I would be able to remember exactly how this worked, so I would love it if you could send the council a copy of these slides so that we can go back and check out the examples. That would be helpful to me anyway. And the third thing is just a question on, okay, the tree in lieu fee. That means if someone cannot accomplish what we're putting together here, that then the tree in lieu kicks in. Is that the idea?
That would still be enforced the same way it currently is.
Okay, just wanted to clarify. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, I'll open it for public comment on the ordinance. Seeing no comment, I will close the comment period.
Deputy Mayor Nguyen?
Yes, Councilmember Majors.
I move to adopt the ordinance adding and amending definitions of trees in Chapter 18.06 and amending the significant tree retention and replacement requirements of Chapter 18.16 as presented in Exhibits 1 and Exhibit 2 on the dais tonight.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded.
Second.
to approve the amendment as we received on the dais tonight and the ordinance. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Ayes have it. Six. Okay. 6-0. Okay. All right. That brings us to item number 7.2 is an ordinance adopting local sales tax and use tax option for affordable housing. Is there a presentation on this?
Just briefly, let me get to that. I'm sorry, I was daydreaming here when we were going through the tree thing. So you will recall back in September 3rd, the council passed Resolution 2019-796 declaring its intent to adopt legislation to authorize 0.0073% of the sales and use tax is authorized by SHB 1406. That was the first required step in taking advantage of that provision, which allows cities to retain a portion of the sales tax for investment in affordable housing and supportive housing. That required follow-up via an ordinance to incorporate into our codes that provision, and that is the ordinance that's before you. Ordinance before you would adopt a new section in the code in Title 3. Looking at that ordinance, I'm sorry. Chapter 3.65 would be that provision. I think we've explained the purpose and the fact that this does not result in any increased tax to residents because it's basically the state allowing us to retain what they're already collecting. So it's an advantage to us. It allows us more opportunity to apply that toward affordable housing. And so that's the ordinance before you, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Question, Councilmember Kameen.
Yeah, my only question was when they described this as applies to sales and use tax, what use tax would be applicable in our city?
So that would be services, you know, those kind of uses where there's a tax involved. If you, that may include professional services, I believe.
Oh.
But it's not necessarily just a.
So it's essentially a kind of sales tax, a different item you're
taxing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thanks.
Point of clarification there?
I think primarily that is like a use tax if you buy something, let's say you buy a car in Oregon and you bring it up here and you pay that. So it's just a more inclusive definition of sales tax.
And so you don't pay sales tax, but it is a use tax. So you're paying sales tax, but it's called a use tax.
Right.
It's the same thing as a sales tax.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Council Member Majors.
Thank you. Just point of information, it applies to everything which is currently subject to sales taxes and use tax, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Which is defined, you can go to the DOR website and look at that list of what that actually, very long list of what those things are.
Okay, any other questions? All right, this is an ordinance, and I will once again open it up for public comment. Any comment out there? And we'll close the public comment period. So any further discussion, any questions, any motions? Councilmember Kameen.
Yeah, I move to adopt the ordinance adopting local sales tax option for affordable housing.
Second.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to adopt the ordinance for local sales tax for affordable housing. All in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Ayes have it 6-0. And we are to legislative priorities discussion. City Manager Wyman,
sure, is that I'll you? Kick this off. Yes, thank you, Deputy Mayor. So every year, the City Council considers around this time, sometime in the fall typically, whether or not the Council wants to adopt a legislative agenda for the upcoming Washington State legislative period. So this year is what's called a short session. It's a 60-day session that starts in January. Councils considered various years. We typically start with the Association of Washington Cities recommended legislative priorities as I still want to call them draft because the ADBC hasn't officially adopted the list yet. That's what's in your packet. You know, 99 times out of 100, they will be adopted, as you see here. So it's a really, it's a good starting point for the council to consider. But as I also mentioned in the packet, council members have their own interests. Many of you serve on other regional committees that might have their own legislative priority list. And so what this really is just an opportunity for the council to think about, are there things that we as a group, as a city, want to communicate to our representatives in the upcoming session that are a priority to the city, to the residents, to try to push, get a little bit more push behind. And so if you end up adopting all or some of the AWC items, it just, we're just one more city trying to add support to that. But if there's something specific that this council or the city wants to include, unique or specific to Newcastle, this is a great opportunity to do it. But the idea for this evening is just to kind of introduce this item. If there's things that you want to talk about or ideas, or there's some more research that you want staff to do into something, we can do that. If it's a straightforward item, we'll probably bring this back at the next council meeting for adoption. But we have a little bit of time because we, again, the session doesn't start until next year. But it's always good if there's something unique to get it in the hands of our legislators even earlier than that, so we can start to have some conversations. And also add that in regards to the AWC list, I believe Councilmember Simpson served on that committee and worked with other council members from other cities to develop that list that's attached in the packet. So that's all I have for you, and happy to answer any questions. One quick thing. It's not in the packet because we were just kind of kicking this around recently, and I need to do some follow-up. But we have a project. This is not a typical capital year for the budget, so it's a biennial budget. Their bigger projects are every the year that's not coming up, but they do make adjustments to their capital budget. And Jeff and I were talking the other day about the bridge project and the bridge painting. I had some kind of offline conversations with some other representatives about the possibility of maybe asking for some money. I'm going to do some more follow-up work before we bring this back to you. And if there's a chance of that, I would recommend that we add that to our list and not use our money if we can avoid it. And so I'll follow up with that for the next meeting, whenever that is. But other than that, it's open to any other items the council may want to consider.
Okay. Councilmember Bissett?
Yeah, I just have a question about what list goes out to the legislature. It would be the list that's this other group, the major group, is working on, right? Where does ours show up?
Yeah, so it's Newcastle's list is Newcastle's list. So if you want to adopt by reference or list in what AWC, Association of Washington Cities, has, these six or so items, that's your prerogative to do that. And conversely, you don't have to adopt those or recommend those. So if you adopt, let's just say for argument's sake, we have nothing unique. You want to support Association of Washington Cities, which is obviously made up of other cities and other council members. You can just, in essence, ratify that list. We send this list out when the council's done to our representatives We mail it to them, we send it out to some other people, and then we also kind of, I carry it around in my folder when I go down to during the session, and usually in February.
Do we send it to all the legislators?
No, we just send it to our three representatives. But if we do, again, back to the AWC one, if we do support that list, I believe they aggregate, AWC aggregates all the cities that do support it.
Councilmember Simpson.
We're not going to take final action on this evening.
No.
This is going to take a couple. And I went back to the AWC website, went back through the notes and emails I had received, and I think I gave the packet of information I received from attending to Rob, so he has more detailed information. Mm. I have my 10 pages of notes on AWC from when I was there, and it was September 5th, and so that's already all gone out of my brain. But I want to put a plug in for participating in regional committees, and especially AWC, because this is our organization that lobbies on behalf of cities. Number one, make sure there's no unfunded mandates, and make sure cities that are considered in the legislature when they're doing things, and make sure they share revenue and they don't pull it back, especially like public works trust fund loans and stuff. Gas tax sharing revenue, liquor tax. They've pulled that back during the downturn, pulled it back to the state. They haven't really been living up to what they promised in sharing marijuana revenue. Mm-hmm. So, but then last year, the culverts came in, mm-hmm, big time. The city representatives knew that doing their stormwater and installing culverts in all the locations, highways and streets, and making them large enough for salmon passage is a critical issue in a lot of our Western Washington cities, or even Eastern. So that was added to the agenda last year, and some funding did happen in the legislature for culverts, and that did rise to the top of the list. So, and the committee isn't just city council members. I was looking at the names of the people and their titles. It's a good mix of council members, mayors, city administrators, city managers. There's a police officer from one city, and so he's always advocating for make sure we get enough police training, which most cities support, because we want to make sure there's a good pool of trained officers for King County and our cities. And what's also interesting is Bellevue has their policy people from the mayor's office, from the city manager's office, as a representative in addition to their city council representative. And there are some cities that send their the people they hire to
lobbyists.
Lobbyists. Mm-hmm. So there are several lobbyists that attend, and they represent those cities at the state legislature to lobby on behalf of those cities. We used to have a lobbyist and spend some money on lobbying for Newcastle at the state legislature to get whatever funding for projects, whatever. So and for your information, several years ago, a newly elected senator came to our city council council meeting, and offhand he asked our city council, when he was introducing himself, what would you like to see happen in the legislature? One of the council members said, we'd like money to rebuild our playground at Lake Bourne Park. So he went to the legislature and got us, what was it, $300,000?
Yeah, $350,000. I think it was $350,000.
For rebuilding the play area at Lake Bourne Park. So it almost doubled in size, has play structures for all ages now, whereas it didn't back then. And it is a very entertaining and well-used play area, along with benches for parents with backs, so they can sit there for hours without dying while they watch their kids play. Anyway, I put in that plug. So I'm more comfortable getting the more detailed information from AWC on these things instead of the one-liners. This okay. doesn't look as recognizable to me as what I saw during the meeting. And,
I would assume, yeah, and I'm not asking, again, for this action this evening. It's just kind of to get the conversation and the thought process going. I forgot, I don't know the date that AWC is voting, but it's pretty quickly here that they'll finalize. So what I'll do at a minimum, if there's no other direction this evening, is include their final version and then the backup. They put these kind of fact sheets together about two or three pages for each of these items. So I'll include that in the next packet or even in advance of that.
Hold on one second here, because you spoke. I just want to make sure everyone gets a fair shake. Do you have any comments? Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I was thinking, as I read through this, I was thinking about it, and I would just like to throw out three ideas that I came up with, not as motions or anything, but just to see what other people thought of. The first one was maybe there's something we could put as a priority in terms of Newcastle's access to public transportation. I know at the forum the other day, Deputy Mayor Newing said that she and the mayor had talked to Reagan Dunn, I assume, at the county council about maybe getting us some access to more buses or something. There might be something we could do about transportation, public transportation for Newcastle, since we don't really have very much. I had three items. The second one was I really like this plan of that we just went through on sales tax, on cities getting sales tax back for affordable housing. I think that's a great model. And as Council Member Simpson talked about, you know, we used to get more of maybe the liquor tax or some other things. It seems like that model could be used for, you know, we read in the paper all cities are having issues. One of the major issues cities have financially is with public safety. And maybe there could be a model of, okay, some portion of sales tax comes back to cities for covering public safety, something like that. That was my second idea. And then the third idea, just kind of looking at the legislature and what's going on, I personally would be interested in making some kind of a statement about not wanting to see a statewide or local income tax in the state. I realize that's somewhat controversial, but I would be in favor of putting a statement on in support of that.
Okay, Councilmember Majors, do you have anything? I'm just going to go up and down here, and then, okay, then Councilmember Mitchell, okay.
Thank you, Chair. The one item that I have just a question with is a third item down, and it doesn't have to be answered now, but it's the trying to find out what the tax increment financing option is. That's just one item that I'm interested in finding out what exactly that is.
Just real quick, and Steve could probably correct me on this a little bit better, but this is something state of California uses. Many, many states have this ability to do, which is, in essence, you can use the future increase in value of property tax increase in value of a development coming in, and giving somebody a tax break on that future revenue. So a developer comes in, you want to incentivize some new development in your downtown, you can use some or all of the increment of the tax increase to help them finance their project. And so it's something, for whatever reason, the state of Washington, people have been trying forever to get that passed. There's a mini version that passed a few years ago, a light version, but it's still not enough of what people have been clamoring for.
Thank you for
years. Yep.
Councilmember Majors.
Thank you. I'm still troubled as a Newcastle resident and council member by the lack of attention that the southeast side of King County received from ST3 transportation improvements several years ago, and specifically the lack of proposed light rail coming down the southeast side from Interstate 90 down through Newcastle and into Renton and possibly back out to the airport. I don't know where to go with that, but I'm just very troubled by the fact that we're paying for all of those improvements that are occurring on the northeast side, and we're not benefiting from that. So that's my just. I'll stay with that until it goes away.
Yeah,
you're probably not the only one. I know Councilmember Bisson has another comment, but I just have a couple of comments that I think we can probably use some kind of legislative help. Public records.
Yeah.
It's so time-consuming. It is staff taxing. I wish there was some type of program out there that would fund, you know, public records assistance for municipal governments. I see it more and more where cities have to hire, you know, at least a full-time FTE public records person, and many of them have two. Mm-hmm. It's out of control, and I don't think we really have the ears of the legislature because they're exempt from it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's very troubling to me that we have to pay so much and put so much energy, and if we make one little faux pas in providing those records, we can be sued for millions, and it's very troubling to me.
That real quick, that was an item I think AWC pushed for several years. They got right. They got a kind of minor tweaks to the law, but yeah. But I agree with you, not enough. We were just having this conversation today, Sarah and I, just it's endless. I mean, yeah. It's the amount of work, you know, now into our finance department, and it's incredible how many requests and information that just takes so much time to track down. We get requests that are from the date of incorporation to today, mm-hmm. everything related to XYZ, and it's a long time to pull these records, and so you know in your day job what that's
absolutely
involved.
Unbelievable. Couple of other things. First of all, I do believe in preserving the Public Works Trust Fund. I think that's a good vehicle for us for small projects. It gives us some opportunity. I'd like to see something about, you know, there's so many transportation grants out there, but they're like through the TIB, but they're primarily for large cities. I mean, we just don't compete really because we're so small. I'd like to see something really geared towards small cities that could help us with improvements in our downtown corridor that we looked at with our strategic plan and help us implement that plan. And, you know, any traction we can get on that would be wonderful. And I did have Lake Bourne on my list as well. You know, we were so close to getting that grant. And, you know, close only counts in horseshoes, I know, but I say, let's play again.
And we, the cycle for that grant again will be not this session, but the next session.
Yeah.
So we'll bring that back about a year from now again, put that on our list.
And the last thing I have, and I'm not sure how applicable this is to legislative priorities, but we really struggled with the DNR process for the DeLeo wall.
Yeah.
And I think we had just minor conversation about how come they're allowed to run this way? What kind of leverage do we have there in getting that a little bit more user-friendly to communities and open space?
Yep. We've talked a little bit about that. That's my kind of pet peeve, is to try to change that RCW about that. There seems to be, and I kind of alluded to it in the agenda bill about the short sessions. There's an election year, our upcoming election year. They don't want to do anything too controversial. So something like that might be too controversial just for the other side of the state, the session. But that's something I'm not letting go. And I've had conversations with Don and other people about, you know, what would it take to change that law. It's not going to help us at this point, but for other cities on this side of the mountains in the urban growth boundary, to treat that a little bit differently. It works fine in the rest of the state on the other side of the mountains, but I don't think it's appropriate here.
Yeah. Okay. Councilmember Bissett, you had your hand up a little bit ago for round two.
It's just a short point, doesn't have anything to do with it. But the comment that a legislator came here and asked us what we wanted, and we said Lake Bourne, that was a mid-appointment person that was in only for a short time.
Yep.
And lost the next election.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Is that enough
that's
information?
Yeah,
is there
that's,
anybody
that's,
else?
Yes, okay. That's the longest one we've ever had.
Okay, we've been busy this week. All right, we have back from the consent agenda, item 6.4, resolution updating consolidated fee schedule. Councilmember Mitchell, I believe you pulled that. Would you like to speak to it?
Yes, I would, Chair. Because this was on the consent agenda, and I pulled it And the reason is because I just don't fully understand the procedure as far as the school impact fees, as far as collecting the money. What I'm looking for a dollar amount here. I see, I'm referring to page 88, if I may, please. Hopefully you can follow along with me. I see the fee amounts here. Now, I'm assuming, first of all, I don't know if this is just a pass-through.
Essentially, yes.
Okay. So, but I did read up front here that there is some work being done that moves it from one area to another, at least on the impact fees and stuff like that. So I guess I'm looking to justify, and I don't know how many hours this process takes or has taken in the past, or if you can even legally charge the school district for any work done. So since they get all this money, I'm just looking to recoup any time spent by city staff, because we're all cognizant of that, to get reimbursed for that. So that's ultimately what I'm looking for. Now, one of the thoughts that I looked at was on page 77, where we finally talk about the proposal to amend the fee for the pre-application. It went from, actually right now, it's just you're looking to change it to just a flat fee. Okay, so I don't know if we are able to charge the school district because we're handling this money in some way, if we're able to charge them a flat fee, or is it more efficient to, as we know this is going to continue for the many years, just charge a percentage like the fee that we used for the sale and use tax that we just talked about, the 0.0073%. So that's where I'm at. I didn't know if it was a pass or not.
So we currently do have, it's actually in a separate portion here. It's under administrative costs. There is what's called an administrative fee for processing of school impact fee revenue. So that's already in there. The fee is, $80 per school impact fee assessment.
Would you point out, please, what page you're on?
That's on page 90 of your packet. And that's an existing fee, by the way. Halfway down the fee schedule page there, called administrative fee for processing school impact fee revenue.
I see.
About midway through that table. Yep.
Who pays that? The developer?
The developer would pay that.
Okay.
Yes.
And I'm assuming, Steve, to interrupt, to your question, so we have the other part of this is we have an interlocal agreement with the school district, and I'm assuming that number comes out of that, or there's some arrangement in that interlocal agreement that allows us to collect that fee. But maybe, I'm not sure if it's mentioned in there or not.
Well, I know, I've read the interlocal agreement. I know that the administrative fee is identified as that we will be charging an administrative fee. I can't recall if that number is there or not, but I know that's in the interlocal that we will be charging an administrative fee because of the pass-through and the time spent.
Okay, do we feel that covers that cost? Does anybody have an idea on that?
I mean,
we really didn't at this point attempt to assess that as much as try to fix the problem that people are having to mine, if you will, or to dig for the fee rather than putting it on the surface. So this was more intended as a minor amendment this year. We could look into that more when we do a more major fee update to determine what all of our fees, whether we're really covering our costs or not, because occasionally, you know, we'll want to go through and we typically will increase those, you know, based upon the consumer price index. We may want to look at a more comprehensive evaluation of certain fees that we doubt the CPI is really reflecting. So bottom line is it was not my intent this time around to dig into that. But we can certainly look into that next time we do our major fee update.
Thank you. I think that's a fair answer. Thank you.
Councilmember Majors.
Just a point of information, the school impact fees that are indicated on page 88, both for Issaquah School District and Renton School District, are established by the school districts.
That's correct.
Correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
They adopt their own capital facilities plan. They notify us of that plan and the fees.
Great.
Councilmember Kameen.
Yeah, I had a question also. On the on the pre-application flat fee that you're putting together, you say in the verbiage, you say it's never cost us less than $1,000 to do the work that we have to do, so we haven't refunded anything. So my question is, seems like an obvious one, is the $1,000 a good number to get our time back, or should that be $500 more or something else?
Yeah, you know, we don't get our time back for pre-apps. I mean, I think it's one of those things. And first of all, we're one of the few, as far as where I've worked, the only jurisdiction that has charged even this amount for pre-app. It's usually just a nominal fee. The intent is for most jurisdictions is that they'll subsidize that in order to be customer friendly and to encourage formal applications. So we're kind of splitting the baby here, if you will. We're charging much more than most jurisdictions do, but we're not charging near what our actual time is, because for many people, especially the mom and pops and whatnot that are still kind of in the exploratory phase, that's really burdensome. And we really want to encourage people to come in and talk to us. And by the way, I want to mention that doesn't mean that people can't come in and talk to us individually without even going through a formal pre-app process. We certainly provide that service as well. We don't recoup that, but that's just part of our business.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Is there a motion anyone would like to make? Council Member Simpson.
I move to approve the resolution amending the 2019 consolidated fee schedule as presented.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the resolution amending the consolidated fee schedule. All in favor?
May I speak to my motion?
I'm sorry.
I'd like to speak to my motion since this was pulled from the consent agenda. I've often sat on the other side of the counter having informal conversations with staff about potential developments and having actual formal applications where I haul in through all the drawings that are this big to make application. And it's nice because in the front end, it's hourly. You can't tell your client how much this is going to cost. This is terrible. It's awful that you can't tell them how much it's going to cost. So it's contingent on the architect and the engineers to get the best information possible so that they can be responsive and get through this process quickly and easily with as few corrections as possible. So it costs the client as little. So getting a good upfront meeting is really important. But this is nice that the city of Newcastle is setting a fixed fee. At least that's one cost that the architect and the engineers can tell their client that's fixed. So the client, when they're putting their performance together, they have at least one number is fixed. The other issue is we don't have that many big developments. We don't have that many repeat housing people that come through our city. The city of the city of Seattle, they know when certain developers and architects walk through the door that those people know their process and know how to provide all the documentation the city of Seattle wants to process a permit. So when XYZ Architects Engineers walks in, they know XYZ is going to be able to provide everything they need. They have a comfort level. We have to explain our process to our customers because their customer today, they may not be a customer again for 10 more years. So we have to be very thorough and get all the troops together and explain it so that then when they do come in with their finished application, they have everything and they're not sent back multiple times. Give us more information, give us more information, give us more information. So I asked my question of Mr. Osgathorpe ahead of the meeting because I was going to pull this, and he sent me a very long and detailed answer via email this morning. So I was feeling I didn't need to pull this. I'm very comfortable with this. So that's why I made the motion.
Thank you. Councilmember Bissett, you seconded it, did you? Okay.
No comment.
All right, we'll take it to a vote. All in favor to approve the resolution amending the consolidated fee schedule as presented?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Ayes have it, 6-0. All right. Public comment. I keep asking you guys. All right. Nope. Seeing no public comment, we'll close that. Council committee reports. Council finance committee. Council member Majors.
We have not met since our last report.
Thank you. Council salary and benefits committee. We have not met since our last meeting. Regional committee updates. Ms. Wack, our ETP.
Okay, there's a goose egg there. City manager, we'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. A few items in addition to what's in my report. I want to circle back to the fire that's in my report in a second, but I want to update on a couple items that are happened since this was printed. One minor thing, it seems minor thing, but something that Public Works Director Bronze kind of kicked off and worked with the finance department on. Councilmember Simpson may appreciate this, but we now, all of our public works vehicles, up until I think today, for all the years of existence, when they would get gas, they would need to fill our tank. They would drive, we had an arrangement with the city of Renton, we would drive to their shop, they would drive the vehicle down there, fill it up with gas, and drive it back. And that, you can imagine, what is that, a 30 or so minute round trip, 40 minutes by the time they fuel? So, yeah, at least. So, because they meander down to where their shop is, kind of middle of Renton. We now have what's called Voyager cards. So now in each vehicle, this was Jeff's idea to put in each one, we have these Voyager cards. We're able to buy fuel in Newcastle, use that money in the city of Newcastle. We had some issues with some of the fuel in our machinery, so we're buying higher octane, higher quality gas, able to track the fuel internally now in here, because we used to have to get that data from the city of Renton. So it's a small thing, but actually something of each trip, not driving down there about 40 minutes, saves us a lot of time, saves some liability in driving around. And so I want to thank Jeff for that idea and yeah, moving that forward. Couple other things we talked about before. If you recall, the Port of Seattle grant, we kind of couldn't land on an item or on what was proposed. We went back, and I think I threw a Hail Mary at the last minute and said something about the parking idea. The planning staff talked to them. They did not feel that was a viable, or they weren't interested in that. So we've had to let it go because we were past the deadline, or running up against the deadline 2 weeks ago. Another follow-up item came up. I think a woman spoke a meeting or two ago, maybe it was the last meeting, about the bench in Avalon. And so, as you know, the history here of Newcastle, there was different colored buildings and houses. And so there was White Town and Red Town and Rainbow Town. And unfortunately, the one bench that was kind of all by itself said White Town, and without any really explanation of what that meant. And so we've come up with a plan. Jeff actually emailed the woman today what the plan was, which is we're going to move that one bench over to the area where there's a whole host of other ones with the colors. We're going to develop another sign, like those kiosk signs, that explains the history a little bit better, and put a kind of a more generic bench back in its place. And so Jeff emailed the woman today, and she was, I think her comment something, she was very happy with the response, very happy what we're going to do. And she made some comment about she felt even more proud being a Newcastle resident that, you know, the city took her seriously on that. So that was her coming to speak to you, and hopefully resolved quickly. I don't know if it came out already, but we just received GFOA, Government Finance Officers Association Distinguished Budget Award. We've been rolling through that for the last about 10 years, so you'll see that on the inseam of our new budget. A couple comments earlier about the fire, about the communication. I'm like, Christina has just been just killing it with that and getting that information out and just digging everywhere she can for information. If you want, since we're kind of a little early, do you guys mind watching a quick little video so we can watch even? Do you want to bring that up? This is some information I got just before the meeting started, actually. So in coordination with Renton and Bellevue, there's no audio here, but it shows kind of where we are here and that pinpoint where this is off of YouTube right now, where the fire is. So this is the location. You can see kind of in the north, under the north, that brown area where the debris pile was. So prior to the fire, this is somebody who's been obviously dumping a ton of material. This is what that area that kind of came outward now looks like. So this whole area collapsed. So it was on fire. As they were fighting the fire, the water kind of, in combination with the materials and the fire, it just gave way and slid down that hillside. It's about 160 feet down to the bottom. It slid halfway down. You can see it's still burning. There's still about 100 by 100 area still burning down there. And, you know, for reasons that are kind of obvious here, there's no good way to fight this fire. Even arching water from the safe area on the slide and having a really powerful hose actually at this point would run all that sediment down into May Creek, and the salmon season coming up right now, spawning season. It's going to, everything we've looked at, we looked at bringing helicopters in, we talked to King County, we talked to Snohomish County. DNR came out with their helicopter crew to look at it, and they said it's not viable to drop water on it via helicopter. So it's smoldering. It's going to continue to smolder. It might be several more weeks before that fire is out. And so we're trying to contain it, again, not get that into the creek, but this is going to be an effort to get the fire, let it burn itself out, and then once the fire is out, for us to figure out exactly kind of who's liable for this and what we do next with all of that, and we'll can talk to you separately at some other point. But it's you know, Bellevue Fire, they're really, you know, everyone's kind of just, this is a very unique fire there, and they're in the business to put out fire, so they're very frustrated that they can't put it out. But the safest approach, and yeah, you can see the scale there with the vehicle driving up that whole hillside. So the trails are closed on either side of this, and while the smoke is very disruptive to the people that live up there, it's, you know, especially if you have respiratory issues, the reason why the trail is closed below, not just because of the actual fire hazard, but the carbon monoxide that's kind of just sitting down there, it's not right. There's not enough airflow and heat to make it pull away like you would see in a normal fire. So thanks, Jeff. Yeah, I don't know what the next thing is. All hell, our new overlords.
So are we out of that slide into the creek? Are we beyond that danger? Is it still there?
It's it hasn't slid into the creek.
Yeah.
It's slid down. So I would say, you know, we'll see what happens with the rainy season.
Yeah.
But we can't even go down there yet to put, like, you know, stabilization, because it's dangerous down there.
Right.
And there's some areas where there's void. So it's a really deep fire as well. They have infrared. King County Sheriff flew with their helicopter and just took infrared imagery. And so there's a danger of voids that have formed underneath. If you're walking down there as a firefighter, you can actually sink in. So they're looked at it every which way. And the approach is just to let it burn itself out and hope it rains soon, and but not too dramatically. So we'll keep you posted. It's a big, you know, I've been down there a couple of times, and just even yesterday driving around, and the smoke is, you know, an eighth of what it was a week or so ago, but it's still, if you live there, it is unpleasant. You're breathing in a lot of smoke.
Okay. Any questions for the city manager, Councilmember Simpson?
I have a question about the grant that was coming from the port. When did they first notify us that we would be receiving a grant?
They've done that grant now, I think, the last two or three years. I can't. Do you know the date of when that was?
I don't recall the date. It's been
June or July or something. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe June-ish, May, June.
Okay. I think June. Yeah.
Yeah.
Since we had a problem with deciding how to use a grant like that, and we were blindsided, and the council couldn't concur with your recommendation. I think we need some sort of policy, or council needs to discuss how to deal with grants more proactively in the future. So I'm not sure my fellow council members would like to take that up as an agenda item, that possibly we need to have a policy of more options that the staff could come forward with, so that we wouldn't have a situation where the one option wasn't something that council was interested in, that maybe we'd have more options, staff could come up with more options.
Yeah, I guess what I would say for that, broadly and specifically on this grant, it's such a small amount, and the way this grant has worked historically being maybe just two or three years that they've had it, it's kind of a handout to the cities to do small little projects. And so in other cities, the staff kind of just put something together and usually it's ratified. I understand why it wasn't ratified in this case, just because of, you know, our recent history and already working through this stuff. So what I would suggest we do prior to kind of digging into a deeper policy discussion is maybe next year, we kind of have an initial discussion with the council saying, hey, here's what we're thinking. What do you guys think about this before we submit the application? And just handle it that way.
So this is pretty common that the port gives economic development.
This
grants?
Is the second or third year. I can't remember. They they had a change in philosophy a few years ago. They were being accused, in essence, of being very Seattle centric, and so they've been trying various ways, and I credit them for doing it, to reach out to the other communities that actually pay into the Port District. So this is one of the ways they're doing that.
Is this the same kind of grant, like a council member friend of mine is in Auburn, and they partnered with the port in a major project to underground a street pass crossing so that the rail would not have to stop?
No, this is I can't remember what the title of it is, but it's a dollar per capita. So for every person you have in your city, they allocate a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of just meant as, it's geared towards
more economic development.
Economic development,
okay,
thank
show
you.
Show what the link is between
yep.
the grant.
So you're using it to something to promote business in some way or to make development easier or something along those lines.
Could we use it to update our economic development portion or economic development portion of our comprehensive plan? Or
no, I think they wanted something
plan or consultant.
If you have a consultant, they want it to be something more tangible. I think the first year they were very just kind of wide open about it, and then now they wanted it to be something a little bit more tangible that you could show some results.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
those can show. I have a second question unrelated to that. I had a comment from a friend of mine who is elderly and lived in Newcastle a long time, and he was concerned about response time for emergency EMTs. And he noted that we just have the one fire station on mm-hmm. Newcastle Way, and that we still only have, he said, I thought, one response team from that station. Now, I know Bellevue has lots more people are trained to respond than just the ambulance vehicle. The trucks respond, and there's more people at the fire stations who are all trained in emergency physical response. EMT, but I'm not sure.
No, it's advanced life support. So all of Bellevue Fire, I believe, are trained. All of their response people are trained advanced life support, so they're paramedics in essence. They hand off, if there's a BLS, a basic life support call, they will hand that off to a private ambulance company. They'll still respond if possible, but they'll mm-hmm. typically not transport, so they can stay in service locally. Yeah, we have the one station there, but there's concentric circles that overlap. So there's always backup available from their other stations, from Renton, from Eastside Fire and Rescue. I mean, there's plenty of help nearby.
Just like there's backup when the fire department...
Yeah, right. Well, you saw in your neighborhood how many different mm-hmm. jurisdictions showed up. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's taken into account, even though Newcastle's doubled in size. Even we have the same fire station with the same number of firefighters and trucks there, but we're doubled in size.
And that, if you recall, there was a presentation I lose track of time now, but maybe it was a couple mm-hmm. of years ago, we had Bellevue Fire in, and they were talking mm-hmm. about their capital facilities plan and their need for building and expanding stations. Part of that presentation, they showed where Newcastle draws from mm-hmm. and how they're shifting their stations around to provide that redundancy.
Right, right. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. City Manager, I have a quick question. The pedestrian improvements at 70th and 116th, if you can just, either you or Mr. Bronson, can talk very briefly about
that crossing there.
Yay. Thank you very much, King County.
Yes. So the object was we have an enhanced crosswalk on Newcastle Way with the RRFBs, which are the rectangular rapid flashing beacons. And so we wanted to do something similar on 116th in response to complaints about speeding. Now, 116th has much lower volumes, probably half the volume of Newcastle Way. So we'd start off looking at RRFBs, but the tree canopy on the west side and where the back of the sidewalk was proved to be problematic to where to mount the posts. So we decided to kind of back up a step and just put in a raised median and some enhanced signage just to provide more visibility to that crosswalk.
Thank you. I'm very excited.
Yes,
it's right by the school. So.
Yep. That's been in the works for
many
months. It's just been
needed.
From concept to execution with King County takes quite a while sometimes.
Love it. Thank you so much. Okay. Any other comments? All right.
Do it on our calendar.
We are...
What are we at?
Let's see.
So
CIP quarterly update.
So it just, it's in there for Jeff or I, or Jeff really is happy to answer any questions you may have on any of these projects. There we go.
Councilmember Majors.
Thank you. I do have one question on page 141. of 144, or we're near the end. Top item, we're talking about the bridge repainting project. And we're showing expenditures year-end forecast at $300,000, or the whole thing complete.
Yeah.
But we're showing for the award and bid out into 2020. Q1, Q2.
So yes, you caught that. Thank you. I put that in there. Is it? No, I didn't. It's just I updated the schedule, but I forgot to catch. We'll ideally have the bid awarded before the end of the year, but you know, just being conservative, the schedule is more conservative than the year end forecast.
Yeah. So okay, we aren't planning on doing it until next year. Is that correct?
Depends on the contractor. So that's one of the things we struggle with is how much we dictate the work, because the part to be painted is cosmetic. It can be unbolted and carted away and taken to a warehouse and painted.
Right.
So we just don't know if we are thinking, well, do we have them bid two different options? But generally when you bid with a contractor, you want to not prescribe the work and let them have that flexibility. So what we're going to do now is we're leaning towards just highlighting, if they decide the option of painting in place, what their restrictions are on traffic control. And then the other option is clearly saying that, okay, these things can be unbolted and taken away, and give them the maximum flexibility on that.
That's great.
So the goal is to have it bid by, you know, the end of the year, but then in terms of which option they select.
Super. I did not intend for that to be a gotcha. I wasn't understanding what I was seeing.
I should have, so, you know, because the schedule does not align with the year-end forecast.
Thank you for your correction.
And this somewhat influxes my conversation a little bit earlier today, because Jeff and I were talking about this on Monday, and the idea came up about
the grant,
because the conversation I had the week prior with some representatives. So, again, if there's any traction on us getting funding, you know, we'll move through. It's not really design, I guess. We'll slow that down slightly if there's hope of getting state money and not spend our money on it.
Thank you.
Just one other item on that. So I'm assuming moving forward, we've exhausted all opportunities for any warranty that you were investigating?
Right. We pulled the files from archives and dug through those, and there's nothing that really showed. We couldn't even find, actually, the company that painted it. We found the people that fabricated and made those and all the pictures and background, but not the actual company that did the painting.
Mm. Thank you.
All right. Planning, Kellen.
No, I have a question about
Councilmember Simpson.
Thank you. I have a question about the relight project. I noted on phase four, the Evergreen Terrace, Wind Tree, and a small portion of Olympus. I thought Olympus, all the lights were owned by PSC.
They are. This is just how they're being phased.
So what's the small portion? So is there, which portion is that? Is there
a very southern portion
of Olympus?
Very southern portion.
Hmm?
Very southern portion.
Okay. And then the northern portion of Olympus, is that in a different phase?
Yes.
Okay. So it's going into 2020. It doesn't phase. So the later phases are phases 5 through 7. That would be going into 2020?
Correct.
Because they haven't been designed yet?
Correct.
Even though the lights are very similar in Olympus?
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
This is a huge, sounds like from my dealings with PSC, this is a huge project for them. And I learned out just recently, trying to coordinate with CCD, they've never had a project where they've had to convert all the buildings from privately paid to publicly paid. And so it's just a much more laborious process for them doing that.
Okay.
All right. Planning calendar.
Okay. Should I have your document over there? I want to just go over a couple of let me grab that from you. A couple of items on here. Quickly looking, as you can, I think after tonight, I appreciate the fact we're going to get out of here before 9 o'clock. That's great. But going forward the rest of the year, our meetings start to, they're going to get a little bit longer. As happens in the end of the year, we just inevitably, there are some big things that just, that's the way they go. They land at the end of the year. The budget is, you know, obviously a big one that we do. It takes up a lot of time. So we are trying as staff now not to move anything else around if we can, and certainly not adding anything that's unnecessary. And in fact, a couple of these items, potentially the Lake Bourne development regs, and I think there's another minor development reg thing, we might just push those, because these meetings, you know how they go, and there's a lot of big media items, and we want to be able to put our energies towards them. But two other things I want to just point out. So if, as you know, we have on October 18th, we have our Friday budget workshop. So you'll be getting your budget document pretty much handed to you the Tuesday of the 15th. And we did the same thing last year. So we physically, it's not going to be in the packet the week before. You'll get your book. A few days later, that Friday, we'll sit in here and we'll spend 4 or 5 hours just walking through the book. Donna had also put a date out on the 25th. That's kind of a backup follow-up date if we run out of time on the 18th. I believe Councilmember Simpson is not available that day. I think it's really important that all seven of you are here. She's shaking her head no. especially if we're going to be at the point of starting to make any motions and stuff. So what I'd like to do in lieu of that meeting on the 25th is to just have a longer study session, if need be, on the 3rd, on November 3rd. So part of this really depends on how our conversation goes on the 18th. Is there appetite to bring back the fiscal sustainability plan and try to get that done, or are we just going to put our heads down and focus on the budget? If that's the case, we probably don't need a ton of time. I think a few hours on the 3rd would do it. I'm sorry, I keep saying the 3rd. It's the 5th. Yes, okay. I will not be here on November 3rd. I meant November 5th. Anyway, that's just something to consider. I think I'm just going to wait and see how that next meeting goes, but that's just something to file away. Then the other potential change is we got a call just a couple hours ago from Issaquah School District, and you might have received an email earlier today from them. There's a press release they put out. They're doing this opioid crisis kind of reaching out to partners. So I think they met with the city of Sammamish maybe last night, or they're planning to meet with them shortly. They want to talk to they want to kind of have this community conversation thing. And I'm not really exactly sure Sarah talked to them, but they were trying to a linkage meeting. They wanted to have a conversation with the councils that are represented by their district or in their district. And so I secondhand passed to Sarah, said, hey, we're stacked. We've added two extra, you know, we're adding extra meetings. I don't think there's really room for the council to add in a special meeting for this. So they also asked about, well, what can we do it at an hour and a half study session or one of these meetings? So, I just kind of wanted to take her temperature a little bit on that. I was trying to push, can we do this next year, early next year? That seems to be the head nodding of, okay, I'll send that message back.
Oh, yes.
All right, I think that is all, unless there's questions on the calendar.
Great topic for January, because nothing happens at the first couple of meetings in January.
So we're still on for the 25th, or are you saying
the 25th? I would think that we're not going to meet on the 25th. I honestly, I know Councilmember Simpson is shaking her head, but I don't necessarily see the benefit of that meeting. We can keep it on for now and see how our first discussion goes on the 18th. But
are you envisioning that we need two full long days of study session on the budget?
Yeah, it's two afternoons, so they're both like 12 to 4 or 12 to 5.
Okay.
If we were going to do the fiscal sustainability plan, so in other words, if you got your budget book, looked at it and said, okay, I've got some more firm numbers ready to coalesce around the list of options in there, then I would say let's have that meeting or have a meeting where you're at so we can get a vote on it. If there's not appetite to do that until we're through the budget, then I don't know that it's a good use of our time to have a second meeting on the 25th. We're meeting three times in October. We're going to have some extended meetings, and I think November 5th, we could have an extended study session if need be, as opposed to having a special day on the 25th with only six people there. So that's, so to sum all of that up, I guess hold the 25th, but I don't think it's a good use of our time on the 25th. I think we have the 18th, we have the 15th, we have the 18th, come back on the 5th and have a longer meeting.
What are we doing on the 15th?
The 15th is just a regular meeting, but we're just handing you the book.
But we're not going to discuss it?
We're not going to discuss it, yep. We have a public hearing that night just to take broad comment on from anybody who wants to, but we're not discussing it.
Then okay. Nobody's going to
All right, adjourned.